Chuck and Julie, bringing you the truth straight up.
I'm Julie Hagan. I'm working at
an Emmy-winning former investigative reporter, a highly successful trial attorney, and publisher of a major Denver area newspaper. They've been partners as talk show hosts and in marriage as parents for over 10 years, providing thought-provoking information, opinion, and entertainment live, local, and interactive. Everyone's voice is always welcome on the Chuck and Julie Show.
And happy party Friday, everybody. Chuck Bonneval and Julie Hayden, the Chuck and Julie Grassroots Show, Truth Straight Up. The show brought to you by Mountain West Wellness, advanced acupuncture, and Chinese medicine. In fact, Chuck went to see Dr. Jack Schaefer there earlier today. Just me today. Chuck has a bunch of business conference calls and things like that. We've got a great show today. As soon as we get him on the phone, we're going to have Dr. Andrew Bostom. He's an author, and he's one of the original guys who was opposed to all of the government restrictions on COVID. We've got him with us. I guess I'll skip that introduction. Reminder that we're going to be talking at 3:30 to Dagny Vanderjack, the district attorney candidate in the 23rd district. And oh my gosh, what a day in court cases against Trump. But I want to start off with Dr. Andrew Bostom. He's an author apparently, Doctor, we recently testified in sort of a government case, or not a government case, but a case about the mRNA vaccine and kids. And I know you were one of the original people who was originally pointing out that the science did not support all of the restrictive COVID lockdowns and things like that. So first off, welcome to the show. Appreciate your time.
Oh, thanks for having me on.
So why don't you talk to me a little bit? Let's kind of go back and talk about some of the things that you were saying and getting banned for saying. Just so you know, we too, Chuck, we got kicked off of YouTube for saying that kids shouldn't wear masks. But, you know, that was years ago. Now everyone knows that it was completely ridiculous. But why don't you talk about your position early in the COVID era, so to speak, and how you came to that position?
I retired, during COVID, but, I had about a 30-year academic career, as an internist and as an epidemiologist and clinical trialist. And, I think, pretty early on, there was some data from California, both Northern California and Southern California, where they finally were able to take advantage of some of the antibody testing for COVID to see how many people were actually infected as opposed to those just rushing to the hospital and, you know, in dire straits or whatever was driving them to the hospital. This was really the true impact of the disease, which was, which was contagious and spread throughout the population. The data were actually very reassuring. If you get an estimate, something called the infection fatality ratio, just simply the number of COVID deaths divided by the total number of infections. And you get an estimate of the total number of infections again by just screening people, including the large number who were just asymptomatic or very limited symptoms, and seeing if they've developed antibodies to COVID. It's a tried and true technique. It's called seroprevalence. Okay. It's not perfect, but it gives a much better estimate than just looking at the more restricted population that comes to the hospital. And so what those data were finding, and they were really confirmatory. They validated each other. One was a big sample in LA County and the other was in Santa Clara County by reputable, epidemiologists. And they were finding that the infection fatality ratio was nowhere near what we were getting from these hospital series. It was about, up to tenfold lower. And it just was the first signal to me that, this is looking a lot more like an influenza season, maybe a more severe one, maybe sort of the timing was a little off. You came a little later than you would get a typical influenza season. It didn't seem to be the great terror that was being I mean, I understood the hysteria initially, but once we started to see data like these, I got very skeptical and frankly reassured. And the other thing that was very clear, and even the Chinese, as much as you can trust them, were reporting this early on, is how mild a disease it was in children.
Right.
And then as the spring progressed, we saw a whole experiment play out in Sweden, where their public health officials, particularly Anders Tegnell, decided that they were going to practice some preventative measures, but they were not going to shut society down. They certainly were not going to shut down primary, in secondary school. Certainly, I think it goes up to age 16 in Sweden. Those schools had face-to-face education throughout that spring wave. The teachers had to be there. The kids, the Scandinavians just do not have a strong belief in masking, period. So masking was not required of the kids. And frankly, I think it was actually discouraged. And lo and behold, they didn't have a single fatality in their entire school system that during that first wave, and they had a minimal number of hospitalizations, and most of the kids that were hospitalized, that small number, had congenital conditions that they brought with them into the world, and lung conditions, conditions that affected their brain. The healthy kids were certainly not winding up in the hospital even when they got COVID. And then the teachers as a profession, and they're exposed to those kids, they had no higher morbidity rates and hospitalization rates than any other profession in Sweden.
And so when you would think, and this is going to probably be a political question, but you would think that this would be the kind of information that everyone would be like hurrying to get out, right? To say, hey, guess what? After that initial kind of couple of week, month long, whatever panic, there's good news, right? But instead, right. You and other people, us included, were crushed for trying to say right. that. Am I right there?
Well, it became transparently political.
Yes.
There's no question about it. I mean, you can even look at, I was just, because I'm writing an essay about a case that I can't go into too much detail because, all the final, dregs on forever, these damn legal cases, and the final paperwork is in. I mean, we have the transcript of the judge and everything. It's a case in Tennessee that I gave expert testimony on, and we finally won. It's a vaccine case. So I'll be able to share the information in detail, I hope, next week. But the point was in working on this essay I'm writing about the case, I went back just this morning and I was looking at statements that both Rochelle Walensky, who was the head of infectious disease at one of the Harvard programs, and then, as you know, became head of the CDC, and then Fauci, was there forever. He was there. They were making very negative comments and certainly very cautionary comments about the vaccine. And then you see a switch. You see the election in November 2020 and the preparation for the new administration, the Biden administration, and they turn on a dime and become these totalitarian zealots about vaccine mandates and calling people out and calling out institutions and censoring people in the medical fields that, might have disagreed with them. So I'm just left to, I don't mean to sound too cynical, but I think a lot of this was very political. Now, there was a population, particularly with the early waves, that was at highest risk, but those were the institutionalized elderly.
Right.
And once you get outside of that population or other very, very frail populations, regardless of, particularly wildly uncontrolled diabetes and obesity.
Right.
And these were things that we had been warned about for decades, that, this glut of diabetes in the population was going to be susceptible to respiratory viruses and respiratory bacterial infections. And, so we saw some of that. But once you get outside of these high-risk populations and you look at the generally healthy population under 70, you saw an infection fatality ratio of about 1 in 1,000, and that's very flu-like. So the risk was really confined to those people that were elderly and riddled with comorbidity. And the working population, you know, could have just marched through this and should have.
As they do now, right? No one pays attention right now, as they do now.
Well, but the virus did. It appears to have attenuated somewhat,
yes.
But that's also a natural history of viruses and wherever the heck this came from whatever its origins, and it looks like it was tinkered with. It in nature. It actually behaves like historical coronaviruses. You know, there was in the late 19th century. It's now been re-examined genetic tracing and looking at ancestral strains and these are analyses that can be done now biochemically. And it looks like there was something called the Russian flu in the late 1890s. And it was called the Russian flu, but it's now believed to be a coronavirus that circulates as one of the non-SARS cold-causing coronaviruses that kids in particular get twice a year. But it was pretty aggressive when it apparently they think it jumped from cows to humans, so it was a true what they call zoonosis.
Okay.
And but naturally, and it wreaked some havoc when it was a new virus that had just begun infecting humans, but it targeted mostly the vulnerable populations. Over generations now, it's attenuated into this virus that occasionally you hear about it. There'll be an outbreak in a nursing home or something like that. It's OK3, I think, is the coronavirus that it's called now. But at any rate, there is a natural history to evolving towards less virulent forms. Typically, I mean, there are exceptions to that. And so that certainly by the time we get to Omicron with SARS-CoV-2. I mean, that clearly seems to be what happened. More infectious, but the flip side being much less virulent. And so now to be chasing these. And by the way, for generations, we've never developed vaccines for these cold causing coronaviruses that were non-SARS.
Right.
It's the whole history of developing vaccines for respiratory viruses, particularly the kind that mutates so aggressively, like the RNA viruses. It's about 75 years of disappointment. I mean, none of these viruses have been particularly effective. The influenza vaccines, none of these vaccines, the influenza vaccines have very limited efficacy, and frankly, none in randomized controlled trials in terms of preventing hospitalizations and deaths. And that's the other thing that I learned, coming as an outsider, not an infectious disease epidemiologist or clinical trialist, it's appalling what these vaccine trials get away with. It's like they're moving in a parallel track in the opposite direction. In my total, four decades, really, I started out as an allied health professional. The whole emphasis for evidence-based medicine has been when you do these large randomized controlled trials, for whatever it is, for a new diabetes drug, a lipid-lowering drug, an antihypertensive drug, you have to establish its benefit in terms of clinical outcomes. Did it prevent diabetes death? Did it prevent diabetes hospitalizations? We haven't had a trial like that for a vaccine. I'll ask you to guess. When was the last trial we had that looked at preventing hospitalizations, death from an infectious disease with a vaccine?
I don't never. I mean, I don't know.
the 1954 polio trial, the original stalk vaccine.
Well, let me dig deeper in that, because to me that gets to, there is so much about the whole COVID thing that is just insidious and it's going to be hard for you to out cynical me and our audience. But to me, the truly, I think I'm going to go ahead and use the word evil that has come out of this was this whole push for vaccines. I read Alex Berens, and I'm sure he's at the New York Times reporter.
We've collaborated at times, and the other one that I've become quite familiar with and friendly with is David Zweig, who who adjudicated my so-called Twitter suspension,
right?
And found the pinned tweet at my Twitter account, or my X account now, and everything that they accused me of, they had adjudicated was incorrect.
That's true.
And yet they kept the suspension in place until David got hold of my file when Musk took over, and said, well, why is he still suspended if you went through his dossier?
He was right.
During old East Germany or something, and determined that whatever he said, he not only was he entitled to say, but he was correct.
Right.
They had no answer for that. It was the previous administration.
Maybe we should call it Get Us Back on YouTube, right? Because the whole thing. But I know he has pointed out this, Alex Berenson, and you too, obviously, that we don't, we're not taking a look at all of the harm that these vaccines, and they're not even really vaccines, as I understand, but the harm that they cause, right? Because it seems to me, if there is really a risk of myocarditis, which it seems to me there is, then
yeah,
I think
is.
They
there
should
is.
Be
particularly,
telling all
particularly in young, healthy men,
Exactly. And they need to be warning these guys.
And by the way, Julie, we saw that in a much smaller scale with the smallpox vaccine. After 9/11, there was the reintroduction of smallpox vaccination in the military and in a cadre of health professionals that volunteered to help the military. Should they actually, if a biological weapon was used and it was smallpox, and this cohort, grew to about, I think, at least 1 million people that were vaccinated. And lo and behold, it wasn't common, but there was a smallpox vaccine associated myopericarditis. And so we've seen this before. The difference was that they didn't acknowledged it, and there was some reimbursement. A lot of this was shocking to me, but just in terms of what's expected and not expected in these basic randomized controlled trials of vaccines, it's ridiculous. And I'm seeing now, people that have been in the field that I respect, that are vaccine epidemiologists, and some have done trials in Africa. There's an outstanding Danish investigator, Christine Stabel-Benn. But I mean, she's been in this field for 30 years, and it's just in the past year or so, she wrote a piece where she acknowledged that, there's been an absence of clinical outcomes that these vaccines are tested against. And I'm thinking to myself, I mean, I'm glad that she spoke up now, but how did they get away with this for all these years?
Right. Well, yeah, I guess I'm going to go with money, but before, well, I mean, let me ask you about that. I mean, you read these things and I think it's right that you look at all the pharmaceutical ads. And did you see the Pfizer ads, during the Super Bowl? I mean, you look at these ads and
I didn't see it because I can't stand those ads, my understanding was that they didn't even mention the vaccine, right?
No, they just talked about how great. It was more of a touchy-feely, kind of like what oil companies do sometimes, right, where they talk about how wonderful.
No, but they didn't mention the product. They didn't mention the product that's made them the most money.
Right. They just talked about how wonderful Pfizer is because they care. I mean, and you got Travis Kelce, getting
it. I know.
I think it's,
great tight end moron otherwise.
Yeah, exactly. Well, yeah, for a number of reasons. Well, let me ask you then. So, cause you did testify in this case. What do you think people should know about this mRNA? Cause they're still pushing it. Right. And I still know people who.
It's not ready. That's what I would say. It's just not ready. As a matter of fact, Alex reported on this and the Epoch Times reported on it independently. There was a Epstein-Barr virus, the virus that's believed to cause mononucleosis, a vaccine trial. I'm frankly not really sure why they developed the vaccine for Epstein-Barr virus, mononucleosis, whatever. I mean, it can debilitate kids, adolescents, I guess. But they're using an mRNA platform. It's not something that generates a spike protein. Obviously, it's a totally different virus. But it's got the same delivery system with these lipid nanoparticles. They stopped the trial at a relatively early, I don't know, it's phase two or something, Because in a, I think it was only about less than 400 young people that had been enrolled, they had one case of myocarditis, and they but they just they stopped it. I don't know if they're gonna what they're gonna do, if it's gonna restart up, but I think there are issues. I think there are issues with the platform, and
Right. Well, am I right in that?
I think it needs a lot more, I think it needs a lot more developmental work. I mean, it's proteins are being produced that they never predicted. It
Right.
wasn't just the spike protein. I mean, there's a whole gamut of issues. They can't just blow them off. I think
Wow.
they need to go back to the laboratory and the animal testing and,
Well, and I think you try
it's
to
not
figure out how
ready.
to help if people did. Because what, as I understand it, what seems to be the problem, like you said, it's this delivery system, and that the what I don't even really know what this is, but the lipid nanoparticles, they migrate.
Maybe. I mean, it was thought that, that it was producing, at least for the COVID vaccines, the mRNA vaccines, it was producing too much spike protein but look, there were so many basic things that were not true. It's getting way beyond just the injection site. It's lingering much longer than was thought. There's just so many issues now at this point. And then look, in terms of the COVID vaccine,
Right.
I mean, the disease has attenuated to the point where, I mean, are we going to go around then why not, why aren't there vaccines for the four circulating coronaviruses that kids get twice a year?
Right.
It's
Well,
just, I think it's out of control, actually.
it was about a month ago. I was asked to, I was a TV reporter for years, and somebody's putting in, they covered the JonBenet Ramsey case, and somebody was in town shooting a Netflix documentary on it, and they were going to interview me. And so they said, I needed to bring, oh, it was fun. I don't know when it comes out, but they said I needed to bring proof of vaccination and a recent COVID test. And I was never vaccinated. And I told them, I just said, well, I don't do that. And they were like,
Right.
oh, okay. And I was kind of like, why are you even asking for that? And but it was, and they didn't care, right? They said, okay, fine, you
Right.
don't actually need that. But it is some lawyer somewhere, I'm sure, is telling Netflix, you gotta ask this, right? And
Well, it's look,
I don't know how we'd back away from this.
it's the what's ridiculous is that this is not a new this failure to have provide really anything particularly useful in terms of a vaccine targeting a respiratory virus, particularly an RNA virus, is not a new story. I mean, none of this should have surprised anybody. And the fact that, there's a very biased way they look at these short-term results. They eliminate all the infections that occur prior to the person reaching the state of maximal or optimal vaccination. If you come back after your first shot 3 weeks later, and then you wait another 2 weeks after that, I mean, you're talking about a 5 week window where the infections that accumulate then, which are very clinically relevant, are ignored, and the so the counting system is off. A randomized trial means that, as soon as you're randomly assigned. I mean, I know it sounds ridiculous, but it's done for statistical reasons. If you were in a blood pressure trial and you were randomly assigned and you're being escorted now by the research coordinator down to the pharmacy to actually get, your first series of pills, and someone on a gurney smashes into you and, God forbid, you suffer a lower leg fracture, that counts as an event because you've already been randomized. And the reason we do that is because a lot of random things happen in life and you have to account for all of them. And the idea that you're going to just start counting infections at some arbitrary time point is just ridiculous. And in fact, when some analyses have been done applying real randomized controlled trial standards, there's very little difference even in the minor infections early on.
Well, to me, and it seems like what it boils down to is they don't actually want to know the answers. They just want to be able to scare people, to silence
Well,
people they don't like, and to make us buy their stuff.
I mean, I understand, in this case, the this was thought to be, whatever, the 1918 flu, and, there's
Right.
nothing like it. And they were rushing. They were rushing something out that had been in the pipeline for a long time, you know. But in the end, it's no excuse. But the problems, like I'm saying, the problems antedate the COVID vaccine.
Right.
You know. Look at what was, and also this, you know, as a society, I don't think we function the way we should. The 1954 trial, when polio was still real, a real scourge in kids, was recruited in, I think it's about 4 months in 1954, and then ran the trial through the end of 1954, and then published the paper early in 1955 in JAMA. They enrolled 1.3 million kids, and then another 500,000 that formed this observational group. That's a study of 1.8 million kids where the recruitment is completed in 4 months with punch cards. You know, to talk about computers,
yeah.
Punch cards.
Yeah.
And what did it do? Well, it showed that the polio vaccine prevented about 375 cases of crippling polio. That's a trial. But
right.
it took 1.8 million kids to come
yes.
up with a result like that. When we studied the coronavirus vaccines, particularly the mRNA vaccines, all of them lumped together included 27,000 kids, and the studies in the age groups like 5 to 11, the initial Pfizer study was about 2,300, and lo and behold, in the short term with that biased counting system, it prevented about a dozen cases of sniffles.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, there were no hospitalizations to look at.
Yeah.
We've lowered the bar on
right.
standards that we had 70 years ago.
Yeah. Well, I think I've only got a few more minutes with you, but I think one of the things that's interesting that's happened is, I know, for instance, we have a 12-year-old son, right? And so for the annual stuff, they're like, do you want this vaccine? And I'd be honest, I had never put a ton of thought into vaccines, right? I mean, we just did the regular scheduled vaccines. But this last time I said, no. I said, I don't want any of them. I said, because I thought, I'm like, I don't believe right now very much of what you people say. Or, you know, and I think that's a scary thing too.
That
when
is
you have
scary.
This.
That is scary because I think, you know, I'm not comfortable any longer, you know, with the tightness and aggressiveness of the schedule. I think they could be spread out more, but mm-hmm. some of the early, you know, the MMR, the childhood vaccines,
right.
So have a track record of,
right.
of helping kids and preventing, you know, preventable, you know, viral diseases. I don't think the baby should be thrown out with the bathwater.
No.
And even there, you know, because pediatricians, I understand they're afraid the kid, you know, won't come back, the family won't come back, so they tend to cram them together. I mean, they probably should be spread out a little bit more to in case there are interactions and rare side effects. But yeah, but it is the COVID vaccine and the pushing it particularly on children where this was such a mild disease. I mean, influenza is
right.
it had a worse course in children.
Yeah.
You know, they've done themselves a disservice, but I think the whole system needs to be reevaluated and restructured. Like I said, it's like they've been on a parallel track going in the opposite direction. Everything in outside of vaccination is moving towards, you've got to prove your product, whatever it is, whether it's a device or a drug, you've got to prove it against the clinical outcome. You can't just use a biomarker, you know, and that's not what's happening with vaccines to this
no.
day. And it's just, I think it's just ridiculous.
Listen, I have to let you go, but can we get you back? You said, you know, you're going to be publishing this essay. Once you get that out and you can talk more about it, can we get, because I don't
yes.
know, we have the comments, people
yes,
love you.
I hope it gets published. I have a potential venue that was interested in publishing it. I just have to get it finished, but I do have to wait for
okay.
the you know, for the final paperwork to be signed off on before I can, you know, I can
no.
really say much more about it.
Oh, that's right.
Like, well, all I can say is we won, you know?
Okay. Then that's a good thing. Well, Doctor, thank you so much for your time and information. You've been wonderful, and we'll get you back on as soon as we can.
Okay, take care.
Thank you. That's Dr. Andrew Bostom, and it sounds great information. I'm sorry I didn't have all of the time to read all of the comments there, but yeah, it's astonishing the stuff that's coming out, and thank goodness for people like him who are able to push back and to stay strong and not just cave into the pressure too. We're going to switch gears here, and again, well, we still have time. We have to talk about corrupt judges, talk about bizarre cases, the Fannie Willis case. But I want to go now, because I think I saw her join us on Zoom. Dagny Vanderjack. Dagny, are you there on Zoom? You are. All right.
Yes, I am.
This is Dagny Vanderjack. We had George Brockler on Monday, who's running for DA in the new 23rd Congressional District. Dagny is also running for the Republican nomination, so we're having her on to talk to her, too. So, Dagny, thank you for your time on this. We call this Party Friday, and welcome to the show.
Thank you so much. My honor to be here.
Let me, first, I guess, because I don't, George Brockler, everybody knows George Brockler, and not everybody knows you. So let me go ahead and just ask you an open-ended question. And first, tell us a little bit about yourself, your background, and why you decided to run for DA.
Absolutely. So I am originally from Europe, actually. I came to the U.S. when I was 18 years old on an exchange year. Later, I was lucky enough to have met my husband, Grant. We got married, went to law school together at Denver University, and we have four beautiful kids. We have lived first in Arapahoe County, and then a couple of years ago, we moved to Douglas County. And throughout this entire time, after we graduated law school, we have been practicing law. So I graduated law school very quickly. After private practice, I actually became a prosecutor for the 18th Judicial District.
Okay.
Got my experience that way. And then I moved on to private practice.
Who was the DA there when you were there?
Carol Chambers.
Okay. So you were a prosecutor, and then in private practice, what kind of practice do you do? A little bit of everything? Do you do what kind of practice do you have?
So over the years, I've been now a attorney for almost 20 years. I think I have done everything except bankruptcy and family law.
And now do you do criminal law as well?
Yes. So criminal defense, everything that has to do with litigation and a lot of the civil cases, like any type of contract dispute, let's say probate over a will or a trust, those are most likely the cases that go into litigation.
Okay. So you've had a lot of time, it sounds like. Unlike our Attorney General, Phil Weiser, you've actually been in a courtroom, it sounds like, right?
Absolutely. There's a funny story. When I was a prosecutor still, my nickname was the Terminator.
Now, how is that?
Once I made up my mind about how a case was supposed to go, I think it was very hard to convince me. I think the evidence that defense counsel would have to submit would have to be truly exculpatory to offer a more softer plea deal. So I was very tough. And I remember one time I went on vacation, and so my docket partner took over my cases. And when I came back, half of them were gone. And I said, what happened to my cases? And he said, well, I just told them, this is it. If you don't plead guilty this time, next week she's back and it's going to be much worse for you. So that's how I became known as the Terminator.
So you've had experience on both sides. You've been a prosecutor, and then you've been, you know, in terms of qualifications for the district attorney's office, and then on the defense side as well, right?
Absolutely, right? And both sides play by the same rules. I think prosecutors have obviously like additional rules of ethics and requirements, because their case is not really about winning. Their case is to bring justice into the system. Defense counsel has a slightly different role, because it doesn't really matter if somebody is guilty or innocent. You are supposed to defend them to the best of your ability. That is our adversarial system. And you do have the Constitution that you need to use and make sure that you hold the government to a certain standard. So I think over those years of experience, I've seen really good prosecutions. I've seen persecutions, which I do not like to see,
Yes.
obviously. And I've made really good contacts with other defense attorneys, other defense practitioners, and I think I have a very good insight what we can do as prosecutors to make this go smoother, but still hold people accountable and give victims the justice that they deserve.
Why then deciding to run for DA in this new judicial district?
Well, I think DA candidates are really not a dime and a dozen,
Okay.
because you have to have a little bit of political acumen, first of all. And my husband and I, we have been politically involved since over 2 decades. So we went to state assemblies and we went to county assemblies. We've helped with campaigns. So that is helpful because I am not going blindly into it. I've seen campaigns. I know what work it entails. And then, of course, as a prosecutor, you have to be licensed for at least 5 years. And it would be good to have experience as a prosecutor and defense counsel. And,
Right.
sometimes people run from private practice. They've never seen a prosecutorial office from the inside. They might not have the business experience either. And I think I combine everything, like the best of all worlds, because as a business entrepreneur, I manage budgets. I have defended and worked with clients from small mom and pop businesses to Fortune 500 companies. And I've helped them with everything from managing their budget to managing their HR to human resource issues, any type of employment law, any type of investments. So I think that brings a lot of that stewardship over financial affairs that I can make work for the office as well, because it's an administrative position too. I need to make sure that our
Right.
$12 million budget in Douglas County alone is appropriately allocated where we get the best results for our dollars.
Okay, and we've got a bunch of questions here from folks. First, let me get to, I'm going to save Barney the, I want to ask you about Fannie Willis, the Fulton County DA, but from Charlene, do you support Trump and has Tom Tancredo endorsed you?
Yes, I do support Trump and Tom Tancredo. We go way back in our friendship. I think we found a picture from 15 years ago, and he was the one who introduced a bad habit of mine. I smoke cigars once a year because of Tom Tancredo.
Did he endorse you, or has
Yes,
he come up?
he did endorse me.
Okay, and then let me ask you about this. Oh, okay. Well, let me ask you about Fannie. I mean, this whole, and this is actually a broader question, not just about the Georgia DA, but one of the things, and we talk about this a lot on our show. My husband Chuck, who's busy right now, but he's a lawyer. I was a TV reporter, covered cops and crimes for decades. And you see a lot of, as you pointed out, persecution, particularly the kind of things that are happening with Donald Trump. And you look at some of the stuff. So a district attorney, as we all know, can use their power for good and can use their power for evil and kind of everything in between. What are your thoughts on that? And particularly what's going on, say, like in New York with some of the persecutions of Trump and in Georgia and Fulton County with the persecutions of Trump.
Well, it is definitely unfortunate because we do see what I believe are political persecutions of elected officials. And I think it will set a very dangerous precedent, right? Because if this is how we can treat the former president of the United States,
Right.
where are we going from here? Because eventually, and hopefully with this election year, the composition will flip, and hopefully we will experience a red wave. I definitely work for that. So a red wave will come, and then what does that spell out for the Democrats? Are the Republicans going to be now emboldened to use the same judicial system against the Democrats? It's disheartening. It should not take place.
What about, did you watch? I know you're probably a lawyer, so did you watch any of Fannie Willis's testimony yesterday?
I did not. I was actually in the hearing, plus I had four campaign events, so I am behind on that. I literally had four campaign events. I didn't come home until 9 p.m.
I thought. It's not fair. I know my husband was, he was just saying he's never seen anything like that in court. Again, well, let me ask you, I mean, in terms of, I know George Brockler would say, you know, he's got all the experience. He's run a DA's office. He's tried all kinds of cases. How would you, and you kind of answer this in terms of you kind of bring from a very rounded kind of position there, but how would you just, I mean, how do you campaign against a guy like George Brockler then, who does have all of this experience and probably is going to have a ton of establishment backing?
Well, I think the big distinction, let's make one observation. I believe in term limits too. So basically, if George Brauchner wins this office again, effectively, he could potentially serve 16 years. Is this what our constituents want? And I think the district attorney's office has a rule that you can run for 2 terms, 4 years each. He served 8 years in office. Then his protege, John Kellner, he's serving currently. So basically, we're taking that power scepter and we're taking it back to George Brauchner. I have a problem with that. And I think so do many other voters in the grassroots that I speak to, because even though it's legal for him, this is a new judicial district, it's still the same county, Douglas County being the majority of the votes, Albert and Lincoln. So it's up to the voters, but I have a philosophical problem with this. I also do not like politicians who campaign for one office and then we spend so much money and effort to get them into the office, and then they run for another office and use the district attorney's office as a stepping stone. And that's what George Brauchner also did. He ran for attorney general, he ran for governor, and then changed to attorney general. And I believe such an important office in my backyard needs somebody full-time who will dedicate themselves. And I pledge to the voters that this is the only office I seek. This is not a stepping stone for me. This is the pinnacle of my career. And that's how I want to serve.
What would you
I'm
characterize yourself as? Oh, somebody's got their hand raised. So as a grassroots or a rhino? No, that's just me. No, would you? How would you establishment grassroots? Yeah, I mean, you use the word grassroots there. What do you? How would
Yes,
you?
yes. I believe I am a very conservative grassroots Republican, and I am very disappointed that over the 2 decades, what we believed we were center Republican Party, all of a sudden, my husband and I, we find ourselves moved to the right. What people say, oh, you are very center, like off
We're
to the center
extreme
right
now.
Republican, extreme now. It's like, since when am I an extreme Republican? So that's puzzling to me. But I guess if we still believe in the Constitution, that makes us extreme, right? If we dare to criticize laws and are anti-Constitution, that makes us extreme. So
Julie, can I
that's
ask
me.
you a question? Yep,
Actually,
Charlene, go. Wait, hang on a
yeah,
second. We
but.
got Charlene. Charlene, go ahead, jump on in.
Oh, yeah. So anyway, I just want to remind everyone that George Brockler supported California's red flag law. And when Cole West was in the House, they did a runaround the chair of the House to get that bill onto the floor. That's how bad they wanted it. And I asked George Brockler about that red flag law. He said, it's for the safety of the person. They get an evaluation. I said, why not use the 72-hour holds where they do actually get a psych evaluation and then they're held for 72 hours and get treatment if they are dangerous? And he said, they don't use that much anymore. And I said, well, it's on the books. Why don't we use it? Why are we creating new laws? He never had an answer for me. He was in on the big push. He's for incremental gun confiscation. I don't care what he says. He talks pretty. And I'm so happy that he has competition because he has been quoted in publications saying the Trump supporters are on the fringe. And he's on that show with Billy in the morning. And he says, sometimes I just look at Billy and say, are we in a full moon? Referring to Trump supporters that call in.
Yes.
So, I'm just thrilled, Dagny, that you're running, and I want to donate to your campaign. That's all I have to say.
I think that's plenty good, Charlene. Well, let me give you a
Hey,
chance, Dagny. We've only got a few more minutes, but oh, does somebody else want to? Okay, Barney's got a question too. Okay, or a comment. Go ahead, Barney.
So you're a breath of fresh air, and I like the accent. Can't help but like the accent. You're obviously a very nice looking woman. I'm sure your husband would agree with me. Who's the better litigator in your family, your husband or you? Who's meaner?
It's me. It's me. He
You
hates
could
the
kick his
courtroom.
ass. Is that what you're saying?
Yes,
Women
and
usually,
it
that's all we
makes
want to hear. That's all we want to hear.
it
And I
actually
agree with
makes for a
Charlene.
pretty good marriage because I think I get all the fighting out in court. So when I come
Oh,
home,
good. You're more
I
happy,
am the nicest wife ever because I don't want
That is
any
awesome.
conflicts.
That's awesome. That's
All
awesome.
right.
But I would like
Thank
to say and add to Charlene's point, look at, and you would have to agree, some of these prosecutors, they have a liberal lean anyway, and then they just get twisted. And Brockler just got really twisted. And, I, all that stuff you said about the, you know, lifetime, whatever, is true. But look, I don't care if you hate Trump or you love Trump. I watched Fannie Willis. That is not the way a DA is supposed to act. Since when, as a, look, if you're telling the truth, you don't have to stutter. You don't have to stammer. She stammered. She stuttered. She lied through her teeth. So did all these other witnesses. And I've always said to my daughter, I'll vote for a Democrat if he's a decent person or she is a decent person. That's all we need. It's not about partying anymore. Just get us real people and quit, you know, back off on Trump. It's real obvious what you people are doing. And I, you know, not you people, you know,
he doesn't
mean
you. Yeah. He doesn't mean you, Denny.
But anyway, good luck. Yeah. George Brockler, stick your gun crap up your butt. We're not going to obey you anyway. So even if George Brockler got his way and had 15 million new gun laws, no, George, we're going to tell you to shove it. So I would recommend to you, if you want to stay solid, leave us law-abiding citizens alone. I know what to do if the bad guy ever comes around. I know that it's not over property or whatever, but leave us alone. We're not going to hurt anybody. Go after the bad guys. And by the way, I actually like Marilyn Chambers. She handled a case that I was kind of, well, I was kind of personally involved with. She's awesome. I thought she was awesome. I don't know what you think of her. But Char did ask you, what do you think of Beth McCain and what about Walsh? He's running. No, he's not running against her. He's running for Denver DA. What do you think of John Walsh?
Well, I wanted to actually answer about the red flag bill, because I think that is a very big distinction.
And Barney,
between...
let's have you go ahead and get off if that's okay. And let her answer.
Yeah, I'll hang up. I'll get off.
Okay.
I think that's another really big distinction between George Brockler, and I think George Brockler will have to answer for his record, and that is just the truth, because at the end of his term, and I think many pundits believe it was because he wanted to get brownie points with the independents, with the Democrats, he had a very considerable shift to the middle. And with our then elected sheriff Spurlock in Douglas County, they both, but Mr. Brockler specifically, was the drafter of that red flag bill. And I don't care in what type of form it eventually got passed, but the fact that he as a Republican went against this principled constitutional stance was to me a stab in the back. And I was sitting with my husband and other Republicans in our area as attorneys. We were just gasping, like, how could he disappoint us? And I think that is one more reason why I am running, because as a DA, I think my voters have a right to know that I absolutely believe that is unconstitutional. And it goes against the very tenets of our Constitution. And I will refuse as a district attorney to enact those red flag bills in our area, which is my prerogative, because we do have a lot of discretions to prioritize certain crimes, certain policies in the district. And red flag to me is an assault on our civil liberties.
Ah, Danny, that's great. That's perfect. We've run out of time. So let me have you tell Charlene and everyone else how they can find out more about you, how they can donate to you, that kind of stuff.
Absolutely. So my website is Dagny4DA or Vote for Dagny. I'm sorry, I messed it up. It's Dagny4DA. You can find me on Facebook, on social media. But if you would please go to www.voteforDagny.com, and Dagny is spelled D-A-G-N-Y.
Okay.
Or you just look up the campaign in the 23rd Judicial District here in Colorado.
You'll get that. But Vote for Dagny is the website where people can all go to. Okay. Hey, you have been, just so you know, George Brockler, because I see, you know, you have see the chat and the Zoom. When we had George on, he was getting hammered. Our audience is not George supporters, and they love you. So if that's any, hopefully that's good news for you.
Well, thank you. Thank you. I appreciate the support, because again, it's a grassroots effort. Any donation helps us with the signage, with getting the message out. And again, to remind the voters that this is your chance to look at the distinctions in the record. What did your elected DA stand for? And is this who you want in office again? It's a career politician. That's what I'm afraid of. And I can like George as a person all I want, but as a politician, as my elected DA, I will not vote for him. And I want to offer that alternative to voters.
All right. You're amazing. People love you, Dagny. Call us back. Let us know if we can help. You know what I mean? We're happy to have you on. Thank you so much for your time today, and good luck.
Thank you so much. Thank you.
All right. All right. That's Vote for Dagny there. You guys, everybody loved her. I'd like to hear the things she said there too. Hey, that's going to wrap it up for this Party Friday. Holy cow. What great guests. If I say so myself, we had today. On Monday, Mark Poff is going to be filling in for us. He and John St. Augustine always have a great show. They're going to be talking about, last week we touched on it a little bit with the CBI scandal and everything that's going on there. And they always have like such great cases. It cracks me up whenever I listen back to their shows. They just have such great cases. In the meantime, though, thank you to our guests. Thank you to everybody on Zoom, to Thomas and all the great guys at BBS Radio. Remember, you can get all the shows at chuckandjulie.com. And now it's time for Party Friday. We'll see you all later. Have a great weekend.